Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that's freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Please share our work. We have a lot of people choosing to stay on the fence, and we need to convince them that they got to get involved and actually start doing things. So I thank you for sharing. We're coming to you from the Noble Gold Studios. And as you know, Noble Gold can save your nest egg. They can save your bank account. You know, I don't know if you know this. The Dodd-Frank Law 2010 says the banks can keep your money. Yeah, you look this up, 2010, you're an unsecured creditor. And as things get tough, really. So can you start over? Of course not. Noble Gold can convert your IRA, your 401k, and they can do it painlessly and they can do it inexpensively, and you'll have control over it. It'll be backed by precious metals. Now, point of contention here. People say, well, Dave, how do you know you can trust them? I've been a customer for 6.5 years, been an advertiser for 7.5. They're the best people to deal with. Let's go to DaveHodgesGold.com. DaveHodgesGold.com. I'll send you a free information packet. That'll come to you electronically. No obligation. No one's going to bug you. And then you can contact Noble Gold and get this process started. With 63 banks on the near failure list from the Federal Reserve, and they won't tell you which ones, I would suggest you act quickly. We have a guest today, James Roguski. And Sarah Westall was kind enough to introduce me to James. And she said, Dave, he is one of the best researchers I have ever met. And that's a compliment because Sarah is one of the best research journalists I've ever met. And she raved about James and she said, you've got to get him on your show. We've had a discussion. I read an article he just wrote about abolishing government. And he went through all the historical precedents, the legalese. Wow. Wow. And look, I'm from academia. I'm not easily impressed. It was really good. Today, we're going to talk about the World Health Organization. And a lot of people, and I warned you about this, I said, you are, well, celebrating too early. They had a little setback. They delayed a little bit, but this ain't over. And James is here to talk to us about this. James, thanks so much for coming on. And I'm really thankful to Sarah for introducing us. And to me, I think the World Health Organization, you and I talked about this in our pre-air discussion. It may not be the most important thing facing America, but it's important, particularly with people who depend on the medical establishment for their survival.
Well, I agree with you, and actually, I think that came from me. I've been reporting on the WHO for well over 2 years, and I do absolutely agree that there are bigger issues in the world, war and peace and, financial issues and all that sort of thing. The issues with the WHO are issues that I think are winnable. They are doable because the obviousness of their lies. And the fact that, they don't really have authority to make anyone do anything. What they are doing is different than most people think. And I think it starts with their name, because really, at this point, they shouldn't be called the World Health Organization. They should be called, the Big Pharma Marketing, organization, because they don't really, pay attention to the things that help improve people's health. They do the bidding of their, they don't like to call them donors. They like to say that, various groups invest in the WHO. And I think that is a more accurate way of talking about it. If you go back 20 years and you see how the financials have changed for the WHO, they do what the organizations that invest in the WHO want them to do. And that doesn't have a reflection directly on what is actually good for people's health. It's what's good to transfer wealth from, various nations and people around the world to those who actually profit from those who have poor health.
I know that Big Pharma is who you're really alluding to, but something popped into my mind, and I made a note of this as you were speaking. As I investigate a lot of organizations and what they do, even the World Economic Forum, the companies that sponsor them, I found in every case that the asset manager, the biggest one, is BlackRock. Is BlackRock involved at all with the World Health Organization that you found?
Well, most likely not directly. They're behind the scenes where they, have holdings in the vast majority of the players around the world.
Exactly.
What the WHO was originally supposed to be was a big country club. Now, I mean that partly facetiously, but it's supposed to be a club of countries. There's supposed to be 194 member nations, and they are the ones who are supposed to be the governing body that oversees the WHO. There's something called the World Health Assembly, which is once a year, all of the nations send a delegate or they send large delegations. Every nation gets one vote, and it's the assembly. It's the one vote from 194 nations that is supposed to set the policy for the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization, quite frankly, being the bureaucracy, whereas the assembly, which, one would think that it's supposed to reflect the wishes of the people of each nation. But, raise your hand, how many people have the foggiest idea of, who it was that spoke for their nation at the World Health Assembly at the end of May every year? There's a disconnect internally in every nation between the people of that nation, what they want, and what their delegates to the World Health Assembly listen to and promote. And, with the United States, it was very, very crystal clear with all of the negotiations and some of the documents that leaked out. The delegate for the United States, Ambassador Pamela Hamamoto, was not advocating, to investigate what would make people healthier in a pandemic situation. They were essentially shilling for big pharma. And, I've taken to trying to borrow and co-opt one of the WHO's acronyms. Okay. In the international health regulations, there's a term that the director general since 2005 has had the authority to make a declaration. Now, that's not an order, that's not a mandate, it's just a declaration. He can declare that there's a public health emergency of international concern, PHEIC, or FAKE. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The director general can just say, okay, there's a FAKE. And I've stolen that acronym because I think what they're really doing is working for the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex, which, if you look at it around, the United States for sure and around the world, it's probably at least 5 times as large as the military industrial complex, and probably 5 times as deadly as well. And so the WHO, in all of the negotiations that I've paid attention to for the last 2 years, all of the video recordings and events that I've watched, and all of the documents that I've read, not one single word was ever spoken or written by anybody calling into question whether or not mandates and lockdowns and social distancing or any of the masks or diagnostic tests like the PCR, which is a fraudulent use of that technology, or the drugs or the jabs had any benefit whatsoever. They did not question that ever. The lesson that they learned from the last 4.5 to 5 years was that big pharma was not big enough. Now, what I mean by that is if you think back to early 2020, 2021, there were shortages of masks, and the United States pretty much cornered the market on remdesivir, okay, remdesivir, which is used, supposedly to treat people for COVID in the hospital. It's an absolute abomination. The testing, the diagnostics, the fraudulent use of the PCR, they came up short, and not to mention with all the jabs, they learned that they did not have the global capacity to jab 8 billion people all at once. And rather than learn that all of those things only made the problem worse, they're moving forward trying to divert billions of dollars to build out the infrastructure to manufacture more of these products that actually cause harm.
Yeah, I used to teach research methods to graduate students doing their dissertations, and we copied medical modeling quite a bit. And so I'm very familiar with the process. I did this for almost 5 years. And when I looked at some of the research we can now get our hands on, they didn't even come close to meeting the professional standards for research validation. And when they say these terms, safe and effective, they're doing a form of confirmation bias. They say it often enough, people might come to believe it. But none of these vaccines are safe and effective based on standard protocols for medical testing. What I can't find is how they're justifying such shoddy research. Have you come across that at all, either with the World Health Organization or Big Pharma itself?
Well, there is no justification for shoddy research, and I don't even think they're trying. I think what you said, I would just like to add to it. Part of the negotiations with the amendments to the international health regulations, Article 1 in the regulations, are, a definition of terms. And there's a lot of very interesting definitions in those, terms that they use in the regulations. But safe, effective, vaccine, case, pandemic, those words are not defined in the regulations. They're not defined in the law. In common use, they're not even really supposed to ever be able to say anything. There's nothing on the planet that is truly safe or truly effective.
Yeah, it's probabilities. Yeah.
What they're supposed to, thank you very much. Exactly. They're supposed to give you, risks versus benefits.
Right.
Break it down by some type of demographic, whether it's age group or gender, or whatever other, factors there might be. And each person is supposed to be presented with the known risks and potential benefits. And each person makes their own decision as to whether or not something is safe. My bad joke about that is if you wanted to manipulate the data and use propaganda techniques to present Russian roulette, you could say if you had a six shooter, it's 84% safe. One time out of six, it's really effective in a negative way. And so a lot of the information about the jabs came out, oh, it's safe and effective. Well, the tests were structured in a way that was obviously fraudulent, even if you didn't look at the data. If you just looked at how the tests were structured to manipulate the data, you go, oh, well, that's a fraudulently structured test. You're not going to get good data from it. But then when the effectiveness went down, 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 and became negative, if you think about it, you can say something is effective, just like that one bullet out of six chambers in a game of Russian roulette is very effective at killing somebody. And so when they say it's effective, and when they say it's safe, does that mean, that they know they have, liability protection and it's safe for them to tell you to take it because they're not going to get sued? And so the language that's used, the word vaccine, when they learned in 2021, really by May of 2021, they had stopped at the CDC, they stopped counting breakthrough infections, which was somebody got a jab, they're fully vaccinated and they still got COVID, whatever that means, the way they determine that. Well, they stopped counting in May, and by September, it was so obvious that the jabs were not doing what a vaccine was supposed to do. Rather than admit that, they changed the definition on the CDC website of what a vaccine is. And, it's not what it's supposed to be. It's not what the common use of the term is. It used to be that a vaccine would give you immunity, meaning you wouldn't get or transmit any kind of ailment. And now it just means, this is their terminology, that it will give you an immune response. Well, you could inject chicken soup in your arm and it's going to give you an immune response. That doesn't make it a vaccine, by the way people think a vaccine is supposed to work. So, they're playing head games with words and language just out of, 1984 newspeak. If you change the meaning of words and you keep repeating them, unfortunately, people do fall for it.
Well, for you to say something is effective, that's public speak. In research lingo, they have to say something. There's a formula, P equals less than 0.05. And that means replicable studies done over and over, getting the same results in the same conditions. And your level of significance testing that you perform shows that your results are due to chance less than 5% of the time. And that's what we mean by probabilities for the average layperson out there. And they didn't even address it. In fact, in most of the studies I saw, James, they didn't even have a control group. So they weren't able to make those comparisons. I mean, these people wouldn't have passed my midterm exam in a 101 stat class. It was ridiculous what I saw. And when I saw that, I started telling people, don't take this because it's untested. There's no science behind it. And I got a lot of pushback, of course, but that's the other thing too. And I know you're no stranger to legal ramifications. After I read your Abolish Government, which was really quite well done, how could they legitimize telling people you must take the vaccine at any level, whether it's an employer or the government? How could they do that?
Well, unfortunately, people have been misinformed or ill-informed or just, unaware. I'm old enough. I'm 64. I had American government class and I remember it vividly. I believe I had it in 10th grade in high school. If you don't learn that your rights are for you to defend, your government is certainly not going to come to defend your rights, and your neighbor is most likely not likely to do so either. It's a societal plague where, we feel that just because someone says something, someone wearing a white coat, someone in a position of authority, someone who should know better, and you trust that they're honest and going to be, telling you the truth. It may very well be that on a metaphysical level, we've all been put to a character test to determine, whether or not the species is too gullible. And, a lot of gullible people are being weaned or called from the herd, because if you are too trusting of people who do not have your best interest at heart,
That's
even though
true.
you might think they do, you're going to suffer the consequences. And so, to bring this back around to the WHO, they're essentially the marketing and promotion arm for anything that even remotely looks like a vaccine. And so, between Gavi and CEPI and all of the different companies and the groups that, feel that injecting poison into little babies' arms all the way up to the elderly is, the path to improved health, as opposed to, good, clean, pure water and air and natural organic food and nutrition and so forth. What they ultimately decided and agreed upon on June 1st, the last day of the World Health Assembly, was even more than the nations who called for the negotiations had asked for. So, rewinding it all the way back to 2021, in the middle of 2021, when the jabs were being rolled out, and nations who were relatively poor, and more importantly, pretty much throughout Africa, there were not manufacturing capabilities to make the jabs and the various drugs and so forth. And so the logistic and distribution problems of manufacturing it on one continent and getting it, into the jungle of the Sahara or the Kalahari, in the middle of Africa, there was a clear distinction in uptake of the jabs in nations that did not manufacture the jabs versus those who did. And so they've actually used the term vaccine apartheid. And the latest meeting of the independent panel, which is a group that in May of 2021 came out with a report that said, there should be negotiations for a framework convention, which is a form of an agreement or treaty, to, funnel billions of dollars into, manufacturing capacity. They very clearly said that they are on a war footing right now. They want to get the still undecided, still unagreed upon pandemic treaty agreed to before the end of the year, because they're very aware that they have a friend in the Biden administration. But if a new administration takes office in January, it's going to be very difficult to push that through.
Sure. Absolutely. I totally agree with what you're saying there. I want to get to a legal distinction, though, and I've tried to explain this to my audience, and I'm not sure how well it's been received. Biden's calling this an agreement to skirt the fact it didn't go through the Senate and get the required two-thirds treaty approval. A treaty carries the force of law. Now, the World Health Organization calls this a treaty. Very clear. Biden says it's an agreement. How can we accept something when we're labeling it differentially? Because if we take it in as a treaty, then the World Health Organization has power over this country to a large extent.
Well, because you brought it up, I'm going to go slamming right into the weeds here, and
Okay.
I'll give you the best answer with my information that I possibly can, and it'll probably take almost everybody by surprise. My understanding is that the word treaty doesn't mean the same thing to Americans that it does everywhere else in the world. There are many words that are like that. Like if you say elevator in the United States, you might say lift in, England or something like that. There are many, many words that don't have the same meaning. So in US law, my understanding is that only after some document that's been agreed upon has gone through and gotten the two-thirds consent of the Senate, been ratified by the president and deposited in whatever depository at the UN or WHO or wherever, then and only then is it properly referred to as a treaty. Everything else is
Got
either a sole executive agreement, a congressional executive agreement. That's how we got into the WHO. Congress passed a joint resolution just by simple majority, and President Harry Truman signed it. Technically, that's not a treaty, it's a congressional executive agreement. Back in 1969, and I want to make sure we're having a distinction here because this is where everybody has gotten us confused. We're dealing with at least two separate things. There's the international health regulations and the amendments that were adopted on June 1st to those existing regulations. But then there's this second document that everyone has mixed these all together. So in 1969, pretty much, the running joke I have with people is, do you remember where you were when they purportedly landed on the moon in July of 1969? Well, at the same time, literally the same time, that same month, they were having the 22nd annual World Health Assembly in Boston, Massachusetts. And on July 25th, they agreed to the international health regulations. That's when they began. Now, those were never voted on by the Senate. I don't think a word was even spoken about them. When all of the delegates from all of the nations got together and agreed upon the original international health regulations, the way they did it and the way they've done subsequent amendments is they said, well, we've all agreed to this. Everybody here is fine with it. We'll give everyone 9 months. And if no nation sends a letter rejecting the amendments, then we'll consider that everyone's still fine with it. And on the first day of January in 1971, they went into legally binding effect. Now, it's taken as a sole executive agreement. Nobody calls that a treaty in the United States, but everywhere else around the world refers to any agreement as a treaty. In 2005, they did the same type of process. All of the delegates agreed to a vast amount of amendments to the international health regulations, and none of the nations wrote a letter saying, no, we reject these changes. So it was just, accepted by default. You acquiesce, then you accept it. It gets a little more entertaining in 2022. They didn't even bother to vote during the assembly. The United States and a handful of other nations violated Article 55. They submitted amendments in the middle of the assembly, and 4 days later, they put out a document that said that they had all agreed to it, but they never bothered to vote. Now, in the United States, we've obviously got some election integrity problems, but the WHO's taken it to a whole new level. They didn't even bother to vote. They just said, yeah, we're good with it. And four nations, interestingly, the Republic of Iran, the Kingdom of the Netherlands, Slovakia, and New Zealand did send a letter of rejection for this fraudulently adopted set of amendments in 2022, but all the other 190 some nations, just let it go through.
What's
So,
the, I'm sorry, but what's the worst thing that's in these amendments? Does it tie a nation into total compliance?
well, see, this is one of the things that has been misrepresented, fake news coming from our side, okay? What the 2005 IHR really did was not the end of the world in a certain level. There's about 50-50. There's a lot of things in the IHR that I really don't like, and there's 50% that you can understand why nations agree to it. The whole idea with the international health regulations is about notification. Really, they should be called the International Surveillance Monitoring Reporting Emergency Declaring Fear-mongering Regulations. They're not really about health. Every nation agreed that if something was noticed going on inside their nation, some outbreak or some increase in disease or death, polio or measles or the smallpox or the plague or whatever, the nation would immediately notify the WHO. So the WHO, if they determined it was of concern internationally, would declare a public health emergency of international concern. So by the IHR, we're obligated to notify the WHO if something's going on. Okay. And the changes that were called for by all of the nations somehow got mangled in the zeitgeist of people reporting on it. What the nations asked for back in the independent panel started it in May of 2021. And then in December of 2021, they had a special session of the IHR. And the nations said, hey, look, the wealthy countries are hogging up all these wonderful products. I'm obviously being facetious. Okay. And they said, that's not fair. We want the WHO to negotiate an agreement so that there would be equitable access to pandemic-related products. Well, what they originally asked for, very specifically, the African nations, there's 47 in the African group, and Bangladesh, very specifically, they wanted to amend the regulations to set up an allocation mechanism. Now, the idea of that is the nations who manufacture whatever products might be needed, they wanted the WHO and the Director General to be able to say, look, we got a request from nation A, and nation B has the manufacturing capacity. So nation B has to send what nation A needs to that country in an emergency. Is an allocation mechanism. Okay. Well, interestingly enough, after about 4 months or so from October, November, December of 2022 and January and February of 2023, the committee that was put forth to review the amendments gave a report to the WHO and the Director General. And they said, well, that's not really going to work. We don't really have the authority to do that. You guys got to come up with a better idea. And then it went secret. And they had negotiations until I found in March of this year, 2024, I stumbled upon a leaked version of the amendments. And what they ultimately ended up doing was not this allocation mechanism, but they settled in on what they call a coordinating financial mechanism. The best way to explain the difference is if you've heard the story of if a man is hungry, you give him a fish, you feed him for a day. But if you teach him how to fish, then he can take care of himself. Well, they settled in on a coordinating financial mechanism because the whole point of all of this is it's always been a trade dispute. It's not about health. None of these products are good for anybody's health, but they're really good at redistributing wealth.
Where I
And
was going.
so the poorer nations got more than they asked for. They wanted to be allocated whatever products they could get when they needed them. And instead, they set up a massive financial mechanism, still to be determined, all the details, to invest billions of dollars primarily in Africa and, island nations and any other low-income nation who can't afford pharmaceutical products to be able to manufacture all of the products they might ever want. They refer to them as global public goods. A global public good doesn't mean it's something that's good for you. A global public good is something like sunshine or air. Okay. I can, soak in all the sun I might want, and you're still going to be able to get as much as you want. I can breathe, I can hyperventilate, and there's still going to be air for you to breathe. This video, once this video is, recorded and published, it technically would be a global public good. Because an infinite number of people could watch it. And if I watched it five times, it wouldn't mean that five people were going to get shortchanged and they wouldn't be able to watch it.
Right.
So the goal was absolutely beyond a shadow of a doubt exceeded by the amendments that were adopted on June 1st by the assembly, because what they got was, a promise of investment around the world to make drugs and jabs and diagnostics and masks and all these many things flow like water from an endless, spring, so that all of these pharmaceutical products would be global public goods available in infinite supply. Because if you were a local tyrant, whether it's your school board or city council or mayor or governor or health board or whatever it might be, it's pretty hard to force people to get jabbed or try to coerce them, manipulate them, if you don't have the jabs available. Now, we didn't really experience that so much in the United States, but in other countries, it was pretty hard for, tyrants to force people to do something when they didn't even have the product to make them do it. That's what they learned from the last 4.5 years, that they came up short. They didn't have enough product to force people to do things that
Right.
were not necessarily in their best interest.
Well, let me ask you, as an outgrowth of what you're talking about, because you took the words right out of my mouth, redistribution of wealth with but to me it also seems like an end play here would be the United States citizens, if we're going to have to supply the third world with these products in the name of health, we're going to have our own health care rationed to us because there won't be an infinite supply.
Well, I don't know what your views are on what I'm about to say, okay? But I have a very, very different view of what health care means. 18 years ago, almost 19 now, I wrote a book entitled Your Doctor is a Liar. And people can have the book for free. I've always given it away for free. You can go to yourdoctorisaliar.com. I'm not just anti-vax, I'm anti-pharma across the board. Health care to me means, good clean water, clean air, healthy, organic, nourishing food, and any kind of herb or supplement or nutritional, item that might help keep you healthy, but also all of the other things, the emotional, the mental, the environmental. Teaching people how to maintain their health is not what the American health care system
Agreed.
does.
Yeah.
And so, if there were to be a shortage of health care around the world, you have to define, well, wait a minute. If there's a shortage of pharma care, look at how much better the people in Africa did during COVID. If you actually look at the WHO's website, they still have the statistics out there. The last time I checked, 175,000, that's a lot of people, but 175,000 deaths in Africa total since 2020 were attributed to COVID. In the United States, the number is astronomically larger. And there's over 1.2 billion people in Africa. The United States has got a quarter of that. They did like 16 times better than we did. We should be going to Africa saying, hey, what did you do? Let's export that and replace our big pharma, high tech, very expensive money making healthcare with whatever the heck was going on there. Now, that's not good for redistributing wealth. So that's not even being discussed. If you look at the statistics for Europe and North and South America and the developed world in general, they did horribly during COVID, where there were not diagnostic tests and people didn't have access to masks and they didn't get remdesivir and midazolam and ventilators and all the jabs. They did far better. And they're not now suffering from the excess death. So the issue is what they're shooting for, in addition to all that we've been talking about, is they want universal health care. But is it really health care, or is it just the pharmaceutical hospital
Yeah,
emergency
I
industrial
agree.
complex fronting as health care?
Your model, treat, yeah, returning customers, for treating symptoms. But I would submit, and I'll tell you what I suspect, and I think the data almost proves this. First of all, our diagnostics in America, when organizations are paid for diagnostics of COVID, and then they're paid for determinations of death on the autopsy report for COVID. For example, I had doctors tell me, guy comes into the ER from head trauma in a motorcycle accident, they put COVID down as a cause of death. I think that skews the statistical relationship between our data and Africa that may not have had those same deals. And also, too, you will never put a ventilator in me from what I learned. I'll never take remdesivir. It's actually written in, we have a medical trust, and it's actually written into my medical trust. My wife would have to give permission, and she will not. And the bottom line is I doubt that these treatments were used very frequently in Africa. So I think it creates a statistical discrepancy, and you're comparing apples to oranges on that. I would suspect the death rate would have been the same, all conditions being equal, but we made it worse by false reporting and by negative treatment.
I absolutely agree, and let me keep going. If you read the WHO Constitution, a lot of people are not even aware that there is a WHO Constitution. The negotiation of these amendments were conducted under Article 21 of the Constitution, and they have five things that the World Health Assembly was given the authority to do in the Constitution way back in 1948. One of those things was to set standards for cause of death. Well, the WHO is behind, the ICD codes, and so they had the opportunity to set standards and put them into the international health regulations to determine cause of death. I don't want to speak for you, but I think we're in complete agreement that that was manipulated in a way that skewed the data to a point where it was absurd. They also have the authority, meaning the World Health Assembly, not the World Health Organization bureaucracy, but the World Health Assembly, the meeting of all the delegates, have the authority under their Article 21 of the WHO Constitution to determine standards for diagnostic tests. Well, they did no such thing. They also have the authority to set standards for purity in pharmacological and biological products. Well, they certainly didn't do any of that for the jabs. And they also have the authority to set standards and regulations for advertising and labeling. Well, hold on, the jabs came through with the full page sheet, insert that said, left blank on purpose. They did nothing, and they have never, this was their 77th yearly meeting, they have never written regulations for all of the things that I just mentioned. Now, if there were standards and regulations globally for cause of death and, diagnoses and purity and advertising and labeling, all of these numbers would have made it look like, well, was this anything worse than a bad flu season? And
No, that's
so,
exactly.
the manipulation of the data and the complete and total unwillingness to even have a discussion about, hey, wait a minute, all of the stuff that we did, it didn't work, it made things worse. Shoving that discussion, into the darkness and silence and not having it at all, and starting out from the assumption, oh, well, we just need more products around the world from big pharma to combat, I'm going to say the phrase, I can't even believe I'm saying it, to combat vaccine apartheid, their words, okay, is insanity. With all of the information that has come
Right.
out in the last couple of years about, clear admission that the jabs did not stop infection, they did not stop transmission. If anything, they aggravated the problem, made it more likely for people's immune system to be imbalanced, leading to adverse events and disease, death, cancer, myocarditis, and so forth. They don't really want to improve people's health because this whole system, I learned probably 2 decades ago that the tests and the drugs and the jabs and the vast majority of what the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex does are actually customer acquisition tools. If you use COVID as an example, you take a totally healthy person and you say, oh, you need to be tested with a fraudulent test that gives you all kinds of false positives and doesn't really determine whether or not you are suffering from a communicable disease. And then you put people on products that damage their health even more, or talk them into injecting poisons to imbalance their immune system to cause more problems than they solve, you're just acquiring lifelong customers.
That's exactly what I meant by return customers. Here's where they lost me very early on. When they were asked legitimate questions in Congress about what about natural immunity, they just ignored it like it was a concept that no longer existed because it would cost them money to not be able to vaccinate someone who's already had it. And then the false positives. This is one thing we see a lot now in testing, and I've come across this in my own research. The false positives of the diagnostic elements, like the PCR test, they're off the charts. And then they do control group, experimental group manipulation. The people with high placebo response, they put into the experimental group to skew the results. And see, I'm someone who understands how this works because I taught this for years. And this is all fraud, people. You don't have to understand a word I just said. It's total fraud coming out of Big Pharma being supported by WHO. I want to get into some of the WHO, what the WHO can do to us, the power structure coming in. If Biden is able to, his people are able to bring this in, can they mandate mandatory vaccinations and quarantines and displace people into medical quarantine camps? Will they have that authority?
No. And
Okay, that's good.
let me keep going, because that's not going to mean that they won't still try to do it.
I see. Okay.
Okay. So let me be very, 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 very crystal clear. And there's a lot of details. I think we have time to cover it. In Article 24, paragraph 2 of the quote unquote pandemic agreement, which is what they officially call it, it says very clearly that nothing in the pandemic agreement will give the director general or the WHO or their secretariat or anybody there the authority to have mandates or lockdowns or travel restrictions or any of that sort of stuff. This is a business deal so that they can throw money into what they call, now they've changed it a little bit to prevention surveillance. It's often known as One Health or One Health Surveillance. They want to put a lot of money into doing what you just said in animals. And you can see it with the bird flu, using the PCR to monitor poultry operations or dairy farms or your sewage treatment plant, your wastewater, wherever they can go looking for a problem to scare people with, trying to find some quote unquote pathogen with a deeply flawed use of the PCR process. That's where they want this One Health surveillance to be greatly expanded. Now, this is the agreement that I'm talking about, which is still being negotiated. A lot of people reported that it was defeated, but as we're recording this, it's only going to be about a week. On July 16th and 17th, they will be having their next negotiating session in Geneva, July 16th and 17th. They're shooting to finish the negotiations by the end of the 2024, because they really would like to get a signature from Biden's administration, but they have given themselves a whole year until the next assembly. We'll see how it works out for them. What they want to do is go looking for pathogens to scare people with, bring them into a newly built out WHO coordinated laboratory network so they can do the genetic sequencing. And one of the things that almost nobody reported on, and it's more than a month ago now, on May 24th, 2024, across town in Geneva at the World Intellectual Property Organization on Friday, the 24th of May, they signed a treaty. They had a treaty signing ceremony. And interestingly enough, South Africa was the first nation to sign it. And what they agreed was that if anybody is trying to put forth a patent application that uses a genetic sequence from some type of pathogen, they have to name the source of the genetic sequence for royalties or for whatever it might
Oh,
be.
for royalties? Is that equivalent? I covered this years ago. The CDC owned a variant of Ebola. They patented it. I've got the copy of the patent papers.
Same exact idea.
Same
They
thing. Okay. That's what I thought. All right.
may have named themselves as the supplier of that
Oh,
genetic
so when
sequence.
they come in, they own the patent, so to speak, the royalties, and they make money on the diagnostics as well as the treatment. Is that where that's going?
That's potentially where that's going, but where it came from is if you go back a couple of years when South Africa and Botswana claimed that they identified a very different variant and it was came to be known as Omicron, they just handed that information over. Pfizer and Moderna incorporated that into the booster, made a whole bunch of money, and South Africa and Botswana couldn't get the jab. They were unhappy, and essentially in the amendments that they proposed, they said, "We're not giving you any more genetic information unless you share the benefits with us."
I get it.
And okay, and so what they're setting up, and this is the negotiations that are still going on, and this is what I thought you were going to say, but you said something even better. In 1992, they set up the Convention on Biological Diversity, where it had been a problem where pharmaceutical companies would find some sort of local culture that would know of how to use herbs and minerals and plants and foods for healing purposes. They would steal the chemical compounds from the plants, tweak them a little bit in the laboratory, patent it, and sell it as a drug. So the Convention on Biological Diversity set up an access and benefit sharing system. If a pharmaceutical company got access to that native wisdom, right, they had to share some of the benefits. Well, if you put a P on front of the access and benefit sharing system, you get what they're debating now, PABS, Pathogen Access and Benefit Sharing System. You can turn that local genetic discovery into money. And literally in the agreement, in Article 3, Section 1, they talk about sovereignty, right? A lot of people have been talking about, oh, the WHO is trying to take away your national sovereignty. Well, I got news for you. It's going in the opposite direction. This was actually nations defending their national sovereignty, saying, well, we found this pathogen. We got the genetic sequence. It belongs to our nation. We're not giving it to you unless you promise to share the benefits.
I get it. Multi-level marketing comes to big pharma. That's what
Kind
this
of. And then the WHO doesn't want to tell you that you have to take it, okay? They want to be in charge of the global distribution and logistics network, run all the contracts through, hand it out to their cronies, put all these products in warehouses around the world. They're very proud that they have a 20,000 square meter, that's four football fields, distribution facility in Dubai. Could you imagine how many contracts you would have to dish out to fill four
Get
football
it.
fields? Okay. And so ultimately, what they're pushing for, what they got mostly in the amendments that were adopted, and what they want with this still to be negotiated, they hope, treaty or agreement, is a big money play. I call it the new OPEC. It's not the oil producing and exporting countries, it's the Organization of Pandemic Emergency Corporations.
I could see where nations would have to bid on needed medications and there would be a scarcity factor and the prices would be driven up. I mean, the typical business practices. You said something really interesting, though. Although the World Health Organization, from what I'm hearing, can't mandate you take a vaccine or quarantine you, they could simply funnel monies to friends in Congress and so forth, you know, as part of these financial agreements. And get them to do it for them so they would have willing customers forced to comply.
Your local tyrants, whether, like I said before, school system, city council, mayor, governor, health department, whatever, they did not need any amendments to the international health regulations, and they did not need any new pandemic agreement to attempt to coerce or abuse your rights and freedoms over the last 4.5 years. Okay? They're totally capable of doing that. The WHO and the whole system realized that there were areas around the world where the jabs and the tests and the drugs and the masks were in short supply. So the local tyrants had a hard time enforcing compliance because they didn't have the products on the shelf. Okay. Now, one last thing, and I think we have a little bit of time for it. In the international health regulations from 2005, Article 31 sort of answers your question about what can, nations do to mandate things. And this is the one little quirk that nobody talked about and still nobody's talking about. And I think it's one of the most egregious violations of fundamental human rights there is to be found in the world. Article 31 of the International Health Regulations since 2005 says that when a person is traveling internationally and they leave their nation and they don't have something like this, which is an old school vaccine passport, okay? Simple little form. If you don't have a vaccine passport, and that is found in Article 6 of the International Health Regulation, I'm sorry, Annex 6 of the International Health Regulations. The nation that you may be visiting has the ability to compel the traveler to undergo a medical examination, prophylaxis, vaccination, or be isolated or quarantined. That to me is just an absolute violation of fundamental bodily autonomy. But here's how they're playing this game. Your country can't do it to you. But when you leave your country, any of the other 190 some countries can, because your rights and freedoms, your Bill of Rights, your Charter of Rights, or whatever nation's protections you might have in your country, when you step outside of your country to travel, you are at their mercy. And so, what that actually is a perverted expression of national sovereignty being used to bludgeon the individual rights of the person who's traveling. A lot of people have been talking about how, oh, the WHO is trying to take away your national sovereignty. It's actually the
I
IHR
get it.
is
I get it.
structured. It's not the WHO saying you have to. It's the WHO putting themselves in the position to profit by giving their good housekeeping seal of approval to various jabs. And then if the nation to which you're traveling wants to abuse you, they're not being ordered to do so. They're being enabled by this agreement in this club of countries, all of the
James,
nations amongst
I'm sorry to
themselves.
interrupt you, but we're flat out of time. But listen, I could also see one state doing it to another inside the United States.
I heard stories of that between, I
Yeah.
believe it was Nebraska and Colorado. I have friends
Yep.
that in Nebraska couldn't
Good point.
travel. Yeah.
I know about that. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest has been James Roguski. James, can people follow you like on Substack? And can you tell us a little bit about how people can follow you?
The hardest part is spelling my name. So it's James Roguski, JamesRoguski.substack.com. And I always give everybody my phone number. That's how we got connected. My number is 310-619-3055. And I'm an advocate of exiting the WHO. So you can go to exitthewho.com or exitthewho.org, and you'll find me anyway. Give me a phone call,
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, how many want to have James back
310-619-3055.
on? We're going to have you back on, James. This has been fantastic. I like how you stick to the facts, your hardcore data, and this is exactly what Sarah told me we were going to get, and she was right. Thanks so much, James. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.